Good morning, Northern Michigan. Welcome to Friday Face-Off. Rich Calkins here in studio. JC taking a little extra time over on Northern Focus. But also joining us via Skype is Keith Gave, our sports director. Keith, how you doing?
I'm well this morning. Rich, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Before we get going here, Keith, with some of the different sports teams here in the state of Michigan, I wanted to touch base with you on the article that you wrote this week for the Free Press, the special article about Bob Probert and the Red Wings and things. And I just want you to kind of expound upon that a little bit.
Well, I was flattered, first of all, that my alma mater called me back and, asked me to write a piece about a guy that I covered for most of his career, all of his career in Detroit. He and I were rookies together in 1985 and got off to a rough start, that team, and so on. And, you know, Bob Probert went through a lot of troubles, turmoil with booze and drugs and so on, but he also played very, very good hockey in Detroit, entertained people on Steve Yzerman's wing for a long time. And made an all-star team, and then had his ups and downs, of course, with rehab and car accidents, motorcycle accidents, and finally the Wings cut him loose, and he wound up playing another 8 years with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
The Free Press asked me if I would just kind of write about my memories of that guy, and I have a lot of great memories about Probert, and I was flattered that the newspaper asked me to share them, and extremely flattered, Rich, they put it on page one of the newspaper yesterday.
All right, you guys didn't get my notes. I wanted to start with Tigers, but that's okay.
Well, we were just
too
filling
bad.
Some time waiting
too
for
bad.
You to
show
get
up on time.
Oh, God, Gabe, you are going to get it. You're lucky you're in Florida. Sorry, we have a book show, and I was interviewing my wife, so what do you want me to do?
Oh, no, take all the time you need, man.
Okay,
don't worry
you.
About it.
Anyways, so you were a part of the Bob Probert movie that's coming out?
Yeah, they interviewed me for that last year, and I had a chance to share some of my memories in the Tough Guy film, the documentary of Bob Probert's short, all too short, but very eventful life. That guy got his money's worth in 45 years, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no question. He was certainly the reason, Keith, that drew me back to hockey. I was a fan as a young kid, and then in my 20s, then all of a sudden, you know, Probert and his fighting and the propensity and the Wings playing better and Jacques Demers and all of that, and that certainly drew me back as an avid fan of the Red Wings.
Well, you know, they went from not drawing flies at Joe Louis Arena to doing pretty darn well in a 3-year span there. But as Jim Devolano told me recently, there were three reasons why people started showing up in great big numbers at Joe Louis Arena from about 1980, the fall of 86 onward, 87, 88, 89. Steve Yzerman, Bob Probert, and Joe Koser. Those were the three reasons. They sold a lot of tickets. Their payroll was very manageable on the cheap side. Everybody was nobody was making a ton of money at that time. Yzerman was the highest paid guy at about $250 a year, probably $250,000 a year. And you know what Devolano told me, I mentioned in the article toward the bottom, those 3 years, that the first 3 years of Demers, when they went to the Stanley Cup semifinals against Edmonton 2 years in a row, then the third year they got knocked out in the first round by Chicago after Demers kind of lost his team after the Goose Loonies incident. But in those 3 years, Mike and Marion Ilitch made $60 million, and they used that money to buy the Detroit Tigers.
I thought it was all pizza money.
No, it was that was the profit from the Red Wings. They 60 of the $85 million that they paid for the Detroit Tigers came from their profits from the Red Wings.
A business that was recently valued at $1.25 billion.
Exactly,
so, pretty good investment on their part.
And it shows the value of really the value of Bob Probert and why the Wings were so patient. It did so much to help that guy through his. His troubles with drugs and alcohol.
Well, as I've shared with you a couple of times, Keith, I spent some time with Probert and got to know Bob in some of the seedier places that he would show up in. And you gave me the book to read, and I'm assuming that the movie is based a lot on the Tough Guy book.
And very much so. Yeah, very much so. I'm sorry for interrupting, but during the book, the writer Christy McClellan Day had hours and hours and hours of audio tape of Bob Probert basically telling the story, sharing anecdotes and so on. And her son, Gordy Day, used a lot of that audio to let Bob Probert kind of narrate his own movie, the story of his life. So it was pretty nicely done, and they're very compatible, the book and the movie.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, a Tough Guy reads a lot like a rock star novel. I mean, Bob had a lot of demons as far as alcohol and primarily cocaine, and and he's very, very it's almost a matter of fact the way he talks about it throughout the book. So, you know, some of it starts out as funny, but it obviously is what ended up killing him.
Yeah, and I agree with you, JC. I don't read a lot of sports books like that, you know, autobiographies of players, because all they want to do is recount all their glory days and so on. And usually a pretty boring read, those kinds of books.
Yep.
But I read Bob's book cover to cover, and I found it extremely honest. I mean, refreshingly honest, a blunt almost.
Yeah.
How much he shared and how he shared it.
No, it is. As a matter of fact, at the end, it got to be a little bit of a tough read. And
yeah,
you weren't really sure if Bob was proud of what happened or just pouring it all out and just letting the reader make whatever judgments he wanted about his life.
Well, I think that's exactly what he did, JC. And you know, for my money, he wrote it like the Bob Probert that I knew quite well in his time with the Detroit Red Wings. And you know, he never always spoke what he needed to say.
Yep.
He and I went toe to toe a couple of times. I don't think it would ever get physical, but Bob got mad at me on numerous occasions. And sometimes I can't blame him for what the kinds of things that I had to write. But, you know, he speaks his mind, and he spoke it in his book for sure.
Right. And that's the thing I was going to point out, Keith, is that some of those quotes in the article that you wrote for the Free Press, absolutely, some of them are going directly right back at you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I tell you what, if God willing, if I ran into Bob Probert today, we'd be able to have a really good conversation and laugh about a lot of things and so on. You know, Bob and I, we had our moments, but he was also, I think in some ways, he trusted me. I was there from the beginning of his career, and I got to know him pretty darn well. And, you know, you go through that with players and coaches and general managers and so on. When you're a beat guy, you eventually have trouble. If you don't get in trouble with these guys, at least on occasion, you're not doing your job very well.
Yeah, that's for sure. You're absolutely right. Your job is not to be their friend.
Exactly.
Well, Keith, you can attest to this, and the reason why Bob and I got along is because Bob, more than anything, loved life. He always wanted people to be happy. He was a pleaser. And
was.
Which is rare for a star athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, he and Darren McCarty have a lot in common, you know that. And and Darren's been able to avoid the problems that ultimately ended Bob's life. But, you know, if I had to write a book about the most interesting person I've met in sports, Probert would be right up at the top of the list.
You're absolutely right. Me too. You know, very compelling personality, a consummate follower, JC and Rich. He was only as good as the last person he talked with. I know there were times that I talked to him, you know, said, Bob, you know, it looks like you're doing good. You could count on me. I would help you. If you wanted to, like when we're in Edmonton or on the road somewhere, you want to go to an AA meeting, I'll go with you. You know, I'll find one and we'll go. And, you know, just instead of going out and getting in trouble, let's find a meeting you go to. And he'd say, okay, you know, that's all right. That's a good idea. And 5 minutes later, Peter Kleeman could walk up to him and say, hey, Proby, let's go out for a beer. And Proby would say, okay, let's go. And, you know, that's how he was. You know, whatever struck him at the moment, he was mostly looking for a good time.
That's the last time I saw him. I told you that story. I ran into him at the hallway at the United Center at a Bruce Springsteen concert.
Yeah.
And we literally bumped into each other, gave each other a hug. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. He's like, JC, where are you going? I'm like, I'm heading out with my buddies. He goes, come with us. And ended up going to a bar with the other three Blackhawks he was with. And it was not one of the times when Bob was practicing sobriety. So it was
right.
Luckily, I got out of there with unscathed. But he was always really generous, really funny. And mm-hmm. I'm sure the movie is great. I want to transition, since I had it on the list, guys. We do want to briefly talk about the Red Wings. Keith, you and I brought it up about the Wings getting bounced down in the draft again. This is, what, the second or third year in a row that they've received a worse position than they should have gotten given their standings in the league. And not that it's happening on purpose, but it's just kind of interesting that obviously this is not a New York Knicks ping pong ball kind of thing for the Detroit Red Wings.
No, it wasn't. The Wings had the fourth best odds going in. They dropped two spots to the sixth overall pick like they did last year. And, you know, that they needed a little luck. This is all about luck. I mean, even the team with the best chance, Ottawa, whose pick went to Colorado, wound up dropping back to fourth. So,
right.
You never know what's going to happen. Here's the thing. I mean, Jimmy D and Ken Holland were talking, remember that little six-game win streak they had at the end of the season, 1-8-9? You know, Ken Holland says to Jimmy D, it's nice to see the team win a little bit, but I can't help but wonder if we're not screwing this thing up a little bit. And Jimmy says, don't worry. There are five really, really good players in this draft. We should get one of them. Don't worry about it. And, of course, they draft sixth. That's the kind of luck they've had with the ping pong balls the last couple of years. Last year they got lucky, maybe. We don't know yet about Philippe Zadina, but he was rated about the third or fourth overall player. A pick went kind of off the grid a little bit. He dropped down into sixth. They got him. The jury's still out whether he's going to be the great goal scorer that everybody thought he would be as an 18-year-old. But we'll see, and we kind of got to hope now that somebody goes off the grid again in the top five picks so that the Wings can get one of those five guys they like.
Yeah, for sure, Keith. And also, Ken Holland there certainly doesn't sound like a guy that's ready to kind of step away from the Red Wings and let Stevie Yzerman glide right into that office.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because the Steve Yzerman thing that I was so sure about him coming to Detroit, so dead solid certain about in July, is a little tiny bit up in the air now. I wouldn't bet my house on it anymore. He's getting lots and lots of overtures. He's already turned down the job in Seattle. He expects that Edmonton is going to call him. But the one, the job that I'm worried about is the New York Rangers. Glenn Sather recently stepped down in New York. They're looking for a president, somebody to run the franchise. Glenn Sather was making $3.2 million. I would suspect the Rangers would throw $5 million at Steve Yzerman to lead that organization. That's a lot of money to turn down, especially when the Yzermans have a daughter living and working in New York. Mm-hmm. So, I still think this is something that Ken Holland has planned for years, Yzerman coming back to Detroit and running the franchise. They have to figure out how they might work together if Yzerman does come to Detroit. But there's also a real good chance that Holland could wind up in either Seattle. He's one of the top two candidates there, or Edmonton. He's a Western Canadian guy,
right,
and he might want to go back home. He could wind up in either one of those two spots, and Yzerman could take over everything in Detroit. But things are still up in the air right now.
The last tail end of our hockey conversation, Keith, as usual, you cannot predict the NHL playoffs as the Tampa Bay Lightning go out and lose their first game.
Getting a 3-0 lead in the first period.
And losing to the Blue Jackets, coming from behind, losing on the road. And then the same thing happens to the Boston Bruins. So the NHL playoffs once again proved to be almost impossible to predict.
No, you're right. When a number 8 seed like Columbus comes back, with four unanswered goals and wins a game like they did, you know what I was thinking? Boy, it would be nice to see the Detroit Pistons do that against Milwaukee. Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Not unless the Greek freak ankle gets way worse.
The NBA is a whole lot different than the NHL. And you know what? Any one of those 16 teams that are in the NHL playoffs could surprise people and win it all.
Yep. When we return, we'll preview the Pistons' entry into the playoffs and their matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks. That is when we return here on Friday Faceoff on WBNZ and WGRY, brought to you by Mega Power Sports in Gaylord. All right, we're back here on Friday Faceoff on WGRY and WBNZ. We have a little technical difficulty with the commercials, so until we figure it out, we'll just talk sports, guys.
All right, sounds good.
I guess that works better than dead air on the radio, which is always a no-no. As we mentioned, the Pistons are back in the playoffs. They did not make the seeding we were hoping for. They get what for them is probably the worst matchup of the in the playoffs, Rich, and that is taking on the Milwaukee Bucks, which they lost all four times to, and none of the games were close.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that would have been a tall task with a healthy Blake Griffin. But late in the year, the past 5-6 games, Blake Griffin did something to tweak his knee, and he was wearing, the times he was playing, he's wearing this big knee brace and with the sleeve over top of it, and this does not bode well for the Detroit Pistons whatsoever.
Well, he did have 44 points against the Thunder.
He did. He was able to rally around and score that, but then the other games, it was so obvious. He couldn't hardly move.
Well, I talked to Keith about this, so he's going to have, maybe he won't play in game number one. The spread of games in the NBA playoffs is somewhat different than the NHL,
yes.
So it's not every other night. So he could take off the game tomorrow and have almost a week's worth of rest because they don't play again until Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a Sunday-Wednesday start, both in Milwaukee. And yeah, there is. I mean, NBA, of course, they stretch these playoffs out as long as possible, and that is the hope of that. But I'm really concerned in most of the games that I've seen him play that it's hurt a whole lot worse than just what rest is needed.
Well, I think so, too. If I were the Pistons, I'd sit them in the first game. I don't think there's a chance in hell they can win that first game. That place is going to be rocking in Milwaukee. Get them healthy, make it a better game in game two, come home and try and win one of those two games, game three on April 20th, game four, April 22nd, and try and stretch this series out a little bit. JC, there you mentioned that none of the games were close. The margin of victory in those four games was over 17 points, 20, yeah. 23, 23. And one game, though, was a three-point game. The Pistons did make it close in one game in Detroit.
Well, there's a couple things to consider here. Number one, most of those games happened early in the year when it was strictly the Blake Griffin show, mm-hmm. before Andre Drummond showed up and before Reggie Jackson started playing as good a ball as he had, on top of the fact that the Bucks are without their – arguably their second or third best player. Chris Middleton is out of the lineup. Now, Milwaukee has fantastic depth, and I don't think the loss of Middleton will affect the Bucks until they get to the finals. I'm assuming they will.
Is he out completely for the
He's done for the
year. Okay.
And he had a revelatory year. He used to be a Piston.
Right. Yeah. He made the All-Star team this year.
But Giannis has had some serious ankle problems himself recently, and he's one of those guys that hasn't pulled himself out of the games. He was screaming at the team to leave him in. So it's going to be an odd series. Keith, I tend to agree with you, although traditionally, if you're going to steal a game, it's usually the first game of a series.
Yeah, that's a good point, JC. It's a really good point. We've seen it in a lot of sports that way. We saw it in the Stanley Cup Finals that you just mentioned it. Or not Stanley Cup Finals, Stanley Cup Playoffs, the first round, it happened there. You're right, that first game you can jump on some people. So now you got me thinking twice.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to need big contributions from Wayne Ellington, who has had some great games.
He hasn't done much recently. He was one of the reasons why the Pistons made a turnaround and one of the reasons why they haven't played so well. His shot hasn't been falling recently. Kennard has been slowed down.
I disagree. Kennard's coming on lately. He's played he's played very, very well the second half. So, well, since the trade, when Bullock,
I'm just saying the last five games, Ellington and Kennard done crap, to be perfectly honest with you. You take a look at the score sheets, and I don't think Kennard scored in double points in April.
He did. He did have 25 the other night.
Yeah.
So he did in that game. But, yeah, him, Kennard, and Drummond needs to step up his game continuously. I mean, he's still playing great. But if Blake can't go, or Blake's only about 60%, then we definitely need him. And Ish Smith, once again, coming off the bench, he needs to provide that energy and really get this Pistons second team, give them some quality minutes.
Well, that's the biggest reason why the Pistons have gotten smoked for the most part against Milwaukee, is Milwaukee's second team is hardly different than their first.
I know.
And they play amazing defense. They've got great length. It's just not a good matchup. You know, if the Pistons won this series, it'd be one of the biggest upsets in the history of sports.
No question. Yeah. No question.
Yeah, totally agree. That would be a huge upset. Again, you know, with Blake, feeling ailing with that knee. Again, it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens here. I suspect that he may need surgery at the end of the season.
Well, let me just you mentioned Luke Kennard. The last two games, he had 27 in the last game against the New York Knicks. He was
18.
four for 8 from 3-point. Then game before against Memphis, 15 points. He was 5 for 9 from the 3-point line. He's going to help this team more than hurt him.
No, I know. I'm just saying that when it was down the stretch and they needed to win some of those games, especially with Blake out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Kennard and Ellington, there were a lot of games where they didn't contribute what they had been in the run up to it.
They were kind of no-shows against Charlotte, which really hurt them. Yeah, that was the game right there.
Yeah, that game, I was listening. I was down to a Tiger game on Tuesday listening to Detroit Sports Radio. They were all in. If the Pistons didn't come back and beat Memphis here this week, they were all for, they were screaming to blow everything up in the Pistons organization and start all over. But again, they're trying to generate phone calls. They're trying to do all this stuff. Sure. But they were dead set about all of that.
The one thing that I've heard that's really kind of bugging me is that, you know, Ish Smith is a free agent. And they're like, well, he's gone. I'm like, why would you let Ish Smith leave? He's only making $5 million a year right now. The guy has been the biggest unsung hero on this team by far, if you ask me.
No question about that.
Yeah, you have to re-sign him for sure. Who else are you going to have run that second unit and have that kind of production that Ish Smith has provided? He is so quick still, even though he's a vet, like almost into double digits now, 8-10 years, that guy is lightning quick, and he gets the ball up, and he provides a different pace of play for this Piston team.
He single-handedly won the most important game of the season against Memphis. When they were down 22-23, whatever, in the second half, he put that team on his back. And Reggie Jackson sat on the bench the entire fourth quarter watching that comeback, watching Ish Smith lead that comeback.
Yeah, no kidding. And remember, that Memphis team, they sat 8 players for that game. Yep. It was basically the second unit and some G League players. And this Piston team struggled. They were down huge, Keith, and I just couldn't believe how much they struggled in that first half. And it took a miracle second half comeback by this Piston team to put them over the hump.
It was shocking, really, what happened.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, seriously, to be that down in their final home game at the LCA. And then,
with your best player sitting on the bench.
Sitting on the bench, and then the fans were booing. Tom Gores was there. He flew in from Los Angeles, the Piston owner. He was sitting in the stands there, and they were, every time out, those Piston fans were booing just because of the lack of effort in that first half against Memphis.
Well, I didn't get the opportunity to see that game, but, I mean, that was when the Pistons have lost in the – throughout the year, almost primarily, it's been because their first quarters have been horrible, and they've had the worst first quarter in NBA history with 9 points. Almost came back and won the game, but which is amazing in itself. But their slow starts have put them in a hole way too many times. But I think it's we'll see what happens in the playoffs. It's good that they made the playoffs. There's, you know, we can speculate after the season what moves they have to make. They don't have a lot of cap room. They've got a $9 million mid-level exception, which could net them a pretty good player. But the free agency thing that's going to go on this year in the NBA is going to be 10 times bigger than last year's. Where's Durant going to go? Where's Kyrie Irving going to go? Where's Kawhi Leonard going to go? You know, the Pistons, none of these guys are going to Detroit.
Right.
So the Pistons will be lucky to get a second-tier player. I mean, it would be amazing if they could get the kid from Charlotte, but I don't think that – I mean, if I were the Lakers, that's the first person I'm going – if, you know, you're saying Kawhi Leonard's not going to go to Los Angeles, that seems to be then
Kemba Walker
would be a great fit in Los Angeles for with sure. LeBron James.
For sure, it would be.
So, I mean, because that guy can shoot, flat out shoot it. You know, where is Anthony Davis going to end up? Again, none of these guys are going to Detroit, so they're going to have to get partially lucky with a kid like who's the had the major turnaround, Rich, at the Nets.
Oh, yeah, the kid from, Spencer from Dinwiddie.
No, not Dinwiddie.
Russell.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell was dead on arrival at Los Angeles, bought into that party scene pretty bad, Keith. When he went to New York, which is not, it's not like it's not a playground itself, but he's turned his game around, and he's one of the 25 best players in the league now. So, you know, the Pistons are going to have to catch some kind of magic in a bottle.
Right.
It's not coming in the draft.
Almost like a reclamation project, like you said, like D'Angelo Russell. He was a guy you couldn't trust in the locker room. He went against everything, JC, the code. He shared information about a teammate that was not right. And so absolutely, Magic Johnson, when he was still president, they had to ship him out and get him into another locker room.
As long as you brought it up, Keith, any thoughts on Magic Johnson walking away from the Lakers job the other day?
Well, it surprised me. I mean, that guy's got as big an ego as there is in sports. And I don't know. I don't know what to say other than it surprised me. I don't know if he's embarrassed by the way that team performed that he largely put together. I don't know why. I don't know what he has up his sleeve now. But it was interesting that he stepped aside. Who's going to wind up going there and fixing that team?
Well, Rob Pelinka was one of the best agents in the NBA, so I don't know what they're counting on him. The interesting thing to me was it looked like they were going to fire Luke Walton.
Yeah.
And I was like, great, because I would say Luke Walton to the Bruins. I thought that he'd be a great fit for UCLA. Oh. And now it doesn't look like they're going to fire him. Luke Walton's got a good head on his shoulders. He's going to be a great coach wherever he goes,
right?
Whether it's in college or the pros. UCLA ended up getting Mick Cronin from the University of Cincinnati, which I think is going to be a good fit for them. But, you know, Magic gets up there and doesn't tell the boss in a press conference, goes, I can't look her in the face and tell her because she's like a sister to me,
right.
But I'm not coming back because this ain't no fun.
Yeah.
Now
he wants to go back to being Magic.
Well, I believe part of that is he doesn't need the money.
No. He was doing this as a favor, I would think, but not realizing that role that he was in is a lot of work. Okay. And Magic's got his hands in so many different projects. It was never going to be
part owner of the Dodgers.
Dodgers, yeah. And all this business.
I think he owns like 7% of the Lakers.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the money. He's the largest Pepsi distributor in the country and then owns a ton of movie theaters. I mean, Magic, you're right. Magic Johnson.
Starbucks.
I can imagine that being sitting in that Laker office, looking at the headlines in the newspaper and having to listen to LeBron James and all these whiny kids. He's like, man, I don't know about this.
Yep.
I gotta go.
And I
you know,
Go ahead.
I they kept when Michigan State was making its little run there in the tournament, when Magic Johnson typically shows up in the second weekend in the Final Four and so on, the camera kept flashing to him. You know what? It struck me that he didn't look like a real happy guy, and it wasn't Spartans were winning, doing well, and so on. They flash on him, and it looked different to me. And maybe a lot of this stuff was going through his head. A few days later, he resigns his job with the Lakers.
Listen, I've told you that story a whole bunch of times, and when I said goodbye to him at Western Michigan after the game when they blew us out of the gym, and he goes, "JC, you got to get the bleep out of here." And it just coincidentally, my ankle goes out the next time I played basketball. Magic has always been able to change the circumstances around him as a player, right? He's like, get on the floor.
Yep.
I'm going to make the team better. And he was a lousy coach. Remember, he tried to coach the Lakers, couldn't get players to play like him.
Right.
For the most part, great players are never good coaches.
Never. Exactly.
That's right.
Larry Bird did a pretty decent job with
it. He did.
And, Casey Jones with the Celtics. But for the most part, great players are not great coaches.
Totally agree.
Michael Jordan hasn't been the best executive.
Yeah.
But Bird's been okay at it. Obviously, Magic Johnson can't coach, and he can't be GM. It's not a knock on him. It's not like they're going to go and pull the statue down in front of the forum. But, it doesn't surprise me. It really didn't. People are like, oh, my God, it was all over sports.
Oh, yeah, for
two
sure.
days. I'm like, you know what? I don't think you understand Magic Johnson as well as you do. And I think, at first blush, Keith, when you say he's got the biggest ego, at this stage of the game, I don't think Magic Johnson's got anything to prove.
Yeah. No, he does not. He's proved it all.
And we're going to look 5-10 years from now. This is not going to tarnish his legacy whatsoever. He's still Magic Johnson.
Hey, if the Dodgers win the World Series,
the thing that tarnished his legacy was trying to do a late night TV show and bombing on that.
Hey, you know what? He made Howard Stern's career with that TV late night show. All right, we don't have any ads right now. So just briefly, I want to talk about a couple of things as Keith and Rich can exhale for a second. Over on Northern Focus, we had Jeremy Bowers in from Spike's Keg and Nails, and his kitchen manager, Lori, has got breast cancer, and we're doing a big fundraiser for Lori on Sunday over at Tinker's Junction from noon to 5. It's $5 for a pulled pork sandwich and all the fixins. They're going to have live and silent auctions, and if you can find it in your heart to help out, then please join all the folks that are going to help Lori. That's this Sunday at Tinker's Junction. And, of course, our Mega Power Sports in Gaylord is always our primary sponsor here on Friday Faceoff. This is one of the great times in sports, Rich. I know we don't talk about golf very often.
But you have to on the Masters.
You got to talk about the Masters. And Phil Mickelson dials back the clock yesterday. 48 years, 10 months old, shoots a really nice 60 or 5 under, and he's right at the top of the leaderboard. But the star power on the front page of the leaderboard hasn't been this strong in a while.
Oh, it's awesome to see, for sure. I'm a huge fan of the Masters. I try to watch absolutely as much as possible. My wife hits the road tomorrow to head to work downstate, so I'm going to be tuning in to watching the Masters all weekend. I'll go over, make a donation there at Tinker's Junction for Lori, and then I'll grab a sandwich and head right back and watch more of the Masters, let me tell you. But I'm a fan of Phil Mickelson. I like Lefty a lot, and if he could somehow pull this off, this would be incredible. But one of the younger guys that I really like that doesn't get a lot of time, a lot of press, is Tony Finau. He's that kid that separated his ankle.
Popped his ankle back in.
During the par 3 competition last year and was able to, and JC, you know how hilly that course is. With a bad ankle, he was able to walk around that course and finish in the top 10 last year. And that was
an 2-under yesterday?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 1-under I think he was. Tiger's 2-under.
There is 28 players under par and then another 11 or so at even par. So it's truly still wide open. Keith, I never hear you talk about golf other than the fact that you don't play.
I came loaded. I wanted to ask you, Chris. There were, you just said, 28 players under par. Why is that? The Masters is supposed to be a harder tournament than that.
Well,
so many players.
I don't know, because people played well yesterday. I mean, it wasn't perfect weather conditions. I mean, Justin Rose, the number one player in the world, played horribly.
Yeah.
And so did Paul Casey. You know, this goes all the way.
Spieth played horrible.
Spieth is in trouble.
He is right now, yep.
You know, Greg Norman said it best about Augusta. It is an easy course. When you're hot, it's an easy course to score on. But your margin for error is so small. It's about putting the ball in these small boxes on the green, a yard apart. You miss by 2 yards, and it's a double bogey.
Right.
And that's what happened to him that last day against Nick Faldo. He was playing incredible golf. He didn't play bad against Faldo. He just didn't get any breaks, and he missed some of his spots. But when you hit the right spots, like Mickelson did, like Brooks Koepka just played an amazing round of golf. I mean, that guy is brutal.
Quietly, that guy just goes around, doesn't draw a lot of attention to himself.
I don't know why he's not quietly. The guy pounds it and can putt.
And
he might be the best player in the world right now.
And during majors, I know it.
If he wins this week, you know, Brandel Chamblee talked me out of it. I'm in that big Masters pool that they do out of Forest Dunes. There's about 100 guys in it. And I was filling out my form, and I was thinking about Koepka because he hadn't played well. And I'm like, well, the guy's really great in the majors. And then I'm watching the night before, and Brandel Chamblee, he cuts everything. There's no way you can win with a cut. Okay, well, thank you, Brandel.
I won't listen to you. No, not a bad pick.
Koepka came in as 22-1 odds in this tournament. That's worth a $10 bet.
And what you'll see with Koepka, too, you'll see as he progresses on later in the rounds, his shirts will actually get even smaller to make his arms that much bigger. I mean, he's got huge guns to begin with, and he likes showing them off, man. And I tell you, he's a guy that works out hard and absolutely crushes the ball right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talent all over the leaderboard. Of course, things will change today. They were talking about little bits of rain. It rained a little bit last night. That means the greens will be a little softer. So if you can still pound it, then the length that you lose when you see those golf balls just galloping down the fairway, 50, 60, 70 yards, I don't get that. Although I did hit a 300-yard drive in Florida, Rich.
Wow, look at you. The warm weather was good to you.
It was good to me. it's almost impossible to talk about the eventual outcome when you have something this many guys on the leaderboard. But you're right, Keith. From your observance, generally speaking, you don't have these many guys. We'll see if the course plays tougher. You know, Saturday is always moving day, and then the old quote, the Masters doesn't really start till Sunday.
Yep, the back nine.
Dan Jenkins said that, but my favorite sports writer, and he's right, isn't he?
Yeah, he just passed away, Keith, right?
He did. We just lost him. Yep.
Yeah. An amazing writer. Dead Solid Perfect, one of the great sports books of all time. And Semi Tough, if you remember that.
Another one, yes.
Did you ever meet Jenkins?
I did. And when I was down in Dallas, I met him. I covered a couple of like the Byron Nelson down there, just kind of hung out and was sort of the fifth man in on that story, and got to share a press room with that guy. He comes with his own entourage. This guy, he was pretty special.
Well, he was
pretty special.
At one point in time, he was one of Ben Hogan's best friends. So, yeah. That's pretty much all the thing that I'd ever ask Dan Jenkins about is Ben Hogan. But no, Rich.
He wrote every sport. He wrote football brilliantly. He could write anything, but he was the best golf writer I've ever read.
And all the players seemed to gravitate to him. It was a close friend with – he got to be the only guy that was a close friend with Ben Hogan and Arnold Palmer, because those two guys hated each other. So,
wow.
Little known story. But, exciting times. You've got opening day the NCAA tournament and then the Masters kind of is
in the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, there's all kinds of great sports action for sure. But just that course, Augusta National, is just phenomenal. Have you been there before, JC?
No, I haven't. Just a quick interesting story about Augusta. I was supposed to play there. My old boss had an invitation for him, and he was bringing me to play at Augusta, which is the absolute dream.
Yes.
And I was in business on New York. I was coming home for one day, and then I was turning down and going around to Atlanta. At the time, Cheryl was pregnant. She was pretty early in her pregnancy. She was about 6 months along. And the day I got home, she tore her water.
Oh.
And the doctors go, well, she's fine. The baby's fine. The baby is nowhere near ready to come out. So we're going to hospitalize her so she doesn't lose any more water and you guys can grow the child. So Cheryl was put into the hospital for 40 days on her back before she delivered Joe. But I'm like, okay, doc, so she's good, right? She's, you know, you got all this 24-hour care.
Right.
Because I got a tea time at Augusta, and he's like, yeah, you're good. And Cheryl threw a fit. So I did not go. I missed my only opportunity to play Augusta. And up until that point, I'd had a lot of invitations to go during the practice rounds.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I said, nah, you know, I want to play there.
Right.
And now
ATC.
18 years later, which is about this time, as a matter of fact, Keith, Joe's turning 18 in June. Not so much. So I've never been there.
Wow. Yes. Yeah.
The punchline to that story?
There isn't a punchline to that story.
No, I'm going to give it to you. You and Cheryl did grow a child.
grew a man child.
Yes, Keith. You did. Yes.
A big boy.
He grew up to be a very big kid.
Yep. Speaking of that, since it's sports wise, he has decided to play football at Kalamazoo College.
Excellent. Congratulations.
He's accepting an academic scholarship. Not a full ride, but it's a lot of money.
And right.
The Kalamazoo College coach is really excited about it. We're going to have one of those signings up here in the school in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, that's great.
So we're very, very excited to see Joe continue his athletic and academic endeavors at such a great college as Kalamazoo College.
Congratulations to Joe, but also to you guys. I mean, that's awesome. Yep.
Well, it's going to be cool to see him compete in college. You know, I was lucky enough to have my daughter do the same thing, and it's really a neat thing. The thing that I'm most excited about is that he's going to get to the university, the college, 3 weeks beforehand to start football.
Right.
And, you know, bond with the team, and he's going to need that structure, mm-hmm. especially his freshman year, to be part of that. And the team is truly academically focused.
I'm sure they have study table. I'm sure they have all that stuff all planned out.
Yeah, we're super, super excited about it.
Everything I've heard, and I've known, I had a nephew who went to Kalamazoo College. I've had some other students of mine attend there and so on. I hear nothing but wonderful, wonderful things about Kalamazoo College, one of the great MIAA schools, and in my view, the best one.
Well, I hope you're right, Keith. They have, as Joe said, they got really cool unis.
That counts.
Yeah, that counts. Yep. All right, we'll take just a quick note here to if you're following along, there's something wrong with our computer. We can't fire the commercial breaks. Oh, darn. But we do want to, again, thank Mega Power Sports in Gaylord on Old 27 right at exit 279 for being a great sponsor of this program. We're heading into boat season, and they've got a great selection of tracker boats. And you need to get over to Mega Power Sports and see Jason and the gang and let them help you up with the best summer of your life. So we got a mixed bag of other stuff left over. We haven't talked about the Detroit Tigers, who have been the second biggest surprise in baseball, if you ask me. Well, actually, there's been a ton of surprises.
Right.
Seattle is 13-2.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But probably the biggest surprise is how poorly all the front runners have been doing.
Yeah.
The Cubs are 4-8. Boston is 4-8. The Yankees are what, 6-9. The Astros started out really poorly. They've gone on a little hot streak, but really, a craziest start to the baseball season, Keith, that I can ever remember.
Yeah, absolutely. In a team that everybody thought was going to bring up the rear, the Detroit Tigers have got off to a pretty darn good start. Other than starting pitching, pitching top to bottom, I can't figure out how they do it because they sure aren't hitting the ball.
Yeah, no kidding. That's for sure, Keith. Right now, the Tigers have scored 33 runs in their 13 games so far. And JC mentioned Seattle. They've scored 117.
Homered in every game so far. They broke the record yesterday. They got a home run in every single game to start the season. The record was 14 by the Indians when they had Jim Thome. So, and Seattle has broken that record. You know, as I said, there's just so many surprises. Boston pitchers cannot get the ball over the plate. Yankees have got the entire team on the DL. The Tigers are super lucky to have played them early on in the year.
Right.
You're right.
They're serious concern. Chris Sale has lost like 3 or 4 miles per hour on his fastball. They don't know what's going on with him right now. There could be something seriously wrong with him, right?
You know, Porcello has looked horrible.
Horrible. He's now, throwing beach balls up there right now.
I don't think anybody's going to be crying for the, you know, the Boston Red Sox or the Yankees for that matter. But, Keith, you're right. The pitching has been brilliant. And Shane Green right now is a relief pitcher. The 8 saves already. Joe Jimenez has really been the only pitcher on the staff that's been kind of spotty. Everybody else has done their job as well as possibly can be expected. Yep.
Absolutely. You know, this is until the last couple of games of this last series with Cleveland, they were the best pitching team in the league. They're still a top four team, third in the majors, all 30 teams in hits allowed at 6.5, fourth in runs allowed at 3 runs per game. They aren't scoring a lot, but they aren't allowing a lot of runs either. Batting average against, fourth at 201 teams are hitting against them. ERA, fourth in the majors. Whip, fourth in the majors. So their pitching is really good, but they are the worst hitting team in baseball.
Yes.
They're averaging 2.5 runs per game. That's 30th in a 30-team league.
Yeah.
They're averaging 191, 30th. Home runs, they have, what did you say, Seattle's home in all 15 games? Detroit has 5 total, 30th in the majors. Hits, 6.2 a game, 29th, and on and on and on. They can't hit the ball.
They can't. And Keith, just to piggyback on some of that, they have 5 regular starters that are hitting below 200. I mean, Griner at 129, Josh Harrison 159, Stewart 175, Mercer 184, and Candelaria 195. I mean, those are 5 starters that they count on day in and day out, and they can't right now, not above.
And Candelaria had a 5-hit game.
Yeah. Right, and he's still below 200.
Yeah,
it's
scary.
Well, I mean, Cabrera is second in hitting, and he's hitting 260. And Castellanos hitting 255. Now, I think their averages are going to come up a little bit.
Yes.
Harrison can't hit the ball this badly. So I don't know how much of it is cold weather and all that stuff. I mean, Cabrera has always been a so-so hitter in April.
Right.
And maybe you can chalk some of that up to it. We knew they weren't going to be a powerhouse, and we'll see how far they can run it. I guess the question that comes to my head is, if the Tigers stay in the hunt in June, is there any talk about them being buyers?
Oh my!
It's a long way off, but
right, yeah. I mean, that would certainly throw a wrench into the long-term plans, I believe, because I believe all of upper management, between Chris Ilitch and all the way to Avila to everyone.
Christian Stewart sitting 175.
I know. So these guys. So I think that their plan is a long-term plan. I'm not sure if they would be buyers, but it sure would be interesting from a fan perspective.
I can't imagine it. I don't think that's in their DNA, their game plan right now. They're hoping Tyson Ross and Matt Moore and some of these other guys can have decent seasons so they can be sellers and add more. Cripe, they were talking about Michael Fulmer having a good season, a good start, so he could be trade bait at the deadline. So, who is right? Yeah, I would love to. I would love to be able to talk about buying rather than selling. That's for sure.
No, I just As I told you, the playoff-bound Detroit Tigers are going to be the Miracle Mets. That's what I'm telling all our advertisers. Go Tigers.
Yeah. Sell.
They might, if they keep going like this, they'll sell. They'll get rid of Gardenhire. He's available.
For as much as we just kind of trash their hitting, they're sitting at 8-5 right now. They started last season 4-8. They've turned it around, and they're making it fun for fans, making it interesting for us, and that's all we can ask for.
Yep. I was able to go down again on Tuesday. They lost 8-2, but it was the best day in the world. That was 60 degrees and sunny down there. So it was the best spring day that Detroit's had. So I really enjoyed that. Had tickets only 4 rows from the field down the third baseline. Awesome seats and a great day to be in Detroit for sure.
Have they had a game postponed yet other than today's game?
Yeah, today's already because
today's
of snow.
Today's already been postponed because they got so much snow in Minneapolis.
It was postponed 28 hours before the first pitch. It was postponed yesterday afternoon.
They got 17 inches.
Yeah.
They didn't have any place to put the snow on the field and then in the stands.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, it's like a Green Bay Packer game.
Yes.
It will be Saturday and Sunday afternoon. It's supposed to be dry but cold, but I can't imagine all that snow is going to be gone.
Well, I mean, the Tigers have got a pretty easy schedule. They're playing the Twins, then the Pirates, and then the White Sox. So, I mean, there's a lot of winnable games in their future until they get to the Red Sox. God knows what the Red Sox will be like in a couple of weeks. The pitching, we had a little sniff of it, Keith. You talked about it down to spring training. Turnbull is going to be starting tomorrow. He's been really good. Tyson Ross has been great. I mean, Zimmerman's been good. Zimmerman probably doesn't have anything to show for it because he's been pitched against the other team's aces.
Yeah.
Right.
He went against Kluber on Tuesday down there, and he gave up 3 home runs. But
he only gave up 7 hits.
I know. And Kluber, though, he struggled most of the day. It's just the Tigers couldn't get the key hits to get base runners in. They had 9 guys left on base in that game.
Yeah.
And Cleveland had none.
And they took care of, what's his name the other day, who had owned them.
Oh, yeah.
Trevor Bauer.
Yes.
Bauer had it owned the Tigers. So, you know, paybacks is a you-know-what. Hopefully they continue to be a compelling story, Keith. That's all we can ask about our Detroit Tigers.
That's right. And you, JC, I got Daniel Norris was supposed to start today, and as a sort of fill-in, I had Tyson Ross scheduled for tomorrow. You got Spencer Turnbull?
Or did Turnbull pitch yesterday?
Yes, yesterday.
Tyson Ross tomorrow against Michael Pineda.
Yeah. So we've got a couple minutes left here, and as you're following along, we had a little bit of a glitch and no spots to run. Again, thanks to Mega Power Sports and Gaylord on Old 27 for being such a great partner for us here on Friday Face-Off. Boating season is coming up. The place to go for your summer dream is at Mega Power Sports. Guys, we got to touch on Keith's favorite subject. That's the Detroit Lions upcoming draft. A week from yesterday is when the NFL draft is, adding to all the excitement. April in the D, Keith. I don't know how much of it is subterfuge or whatever, but there's a lot of talk that the Lions are looking at the offensive line now with their first pick, which, if you ask me, at pick number, what is it, 8?
Eight.
There isn't an offensive lineman in the draft worth the 8th pick in the draft.
Right.
So they're either going to move down or they're playing a little smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
But I agree with the pundits about one thing, Rich. We don't need help on the defensive line with the first round. I know that's where the serious weight in the draft
is.
But they got to take either the linebacker from LSU or Devin Bush, if you ask me.
Yeah, the two Devins, Devin Bush and Devin White, both, you know, as you said, are middle linebackers that can go and play in today's NFL and not come off the field. They're good in coverage. They're good against the run. They go sideline and sideline. They've got the speed and the athleticism.
And they can tackle.
Yes, exactly. Not afraid to put their head in there. And I don't know if you noticed this. It kind of went under the radar a couple weeks ago, JC. But the Lions did sign my running back buddy, C.J. Anderson, from the Rams.
I thought that was a good pickup.
Yes.
Keith, I know you don't follow it. Anything, or you want to talk about the fishing report?
I want to say something about the their draft. You know, they did such a good job filling so many holes with free agent signings, the Lions. I think Bob Quinn did a really nice job there. And I, you know, he's talking openly, which is makes me suspicious actually about dropping down in the draft a little bit. But I like the idea of drafting an offensive lineman. If they can drop down, add another pick in the middle round somewhere and pick a good offensive lineman in the first round, I am all for building the infrastructure to give some of their playmakers a little bit more time to do things, protect Matthew Stafford and so on. I think that would be a really good idea if they could get the offensive linebacker they like.
No, I agree too.
Offensive lineman.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing them, depending on where they dropped, picking up Irv Smith, the tight end from Alabama. Way too high of a – I mean, right now the kind of people are targeting him with New England's pick, last pick of the draft. That kid is a behemoth. He's got good hands and he blocks. He would be ideal for New England. But that's the kind of tight end that the Lions need. You know, if you think about how great Gronkowski blocked for New England, I mean, you know, just very briefly, how badly is New England going to miss Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah. Oh, a huge. I think they're going to miss him unbelievably because, like you said, he was like another offensive lineman on the field. He was the best blocking tight end I've ever seen.
Well, they moved to a running team in the second half of the season. I mean, I could just think of a ton of pancake blocks that Gronkowski made to open up some huge runs, including that drive against Kansas City made some huge blocks, and then he makes a huge catch.
He did, to have the size of him, the ability to run when he was healthy and younger and have those soft hands. I mean, he was truly a freak of nature to have everything combined.
A lot of people think he's still coming back, though.
Yeah, he might come back towards the end of the season, not go through the grind of training camp and the first – half of the schedule.
The first four games or something.
You hit on something. I find it hard to believe that he's done playing football.
Well, he's been hurt a lot. I mean, you know, the one thing is this Boston beat reporter was saying that there's something in Gronkowski that he loves playing football, but he always just thought that New England has kind of screwed him because he gets paid as a tight end, and he's only making, you know, $7 million a year as opposed to Antonio Brown, who's making $18 million a year. I mean, who's more important to what football team? Yeah. You know, the Steelers never went to the Super Bowl with Antonio Brown. Right. I don't know. And the Steelers did go to the Super Bowl and win once without Gronkowski. So, you know, I'm just telling you, that guy was grossly underpaid.
Yeah, as most New England players are. I mean, they do. They set the market for what this is, what they're going to pay in that, and either you're going to accept it or you move on. That's the way, the New England way.
Well, guys, that's going to draw a conclusion to Friday face-off. Keith, thanks for joining us in Florida. I wish I'd have brought some of the beautiful weather back. It was great seeing you and having dinner with you on Monday.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes.
We didn't talk about the amazing NCAA final game.
Oh, it was. That was a great game for sure.
How did they score so many points?
Yeah, those two best defensive teams.
Yeah, you know, as soon as we started talking to Tom Ryan about that, it clicked into me that it probably was going to have way more offense. Just the OPSO Swiss show thing, Keith, that you and I talk about so often.
Yep. These second half especially, wow.
Yeah, second half. And plus it went into OT. So if you had if you had the under, you were screwed royally. And I know a lot of guys had the under.
Yeah, they thought.
All right, we'll see you guys next Friday here on Friday Face Off. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to Mega Power Sports for hosting.